It's Monday, December 6, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Well, it may be the Christmas season in terms of retail and the larger culture, but when it comes to politics, it's something of a silly season. In this particular lame duck session of Congress, a session, by the way, of very dubious constitutional basis, what you find right now is a scramble by both parties to try to find some way to get to the opening of the year 2011 still politically intact. There are huge challenges before this lame duck session. For instance, there are the issues of a defense appropriations bill and efforts to achieve some kind of settlement in terms of what are called by the Democrats the Bush tax cuts, and what you have also in terms of controversy over the continuation and extension of jobless benefits. Now, the kind of political deal-making that appears to be in order, the shape of things that are likely to happen in the next several days, comes down to a compromise between President Barack Obama and Republican leaders in the House and in the Senate. That compromise is likely to mean at least a temporary extension of the tax cuts now in place about 10 years, those that are called often the Bush tax cuts, and also the ratification of the START Treaty that is a very important foreign policy ambition of President Barack Obama. But Democrats, especially those in the Senate, are likely to get their way when it comes to pressing for an extension of joblessness benefits. So we have three different issues here coming together, but wait, it gets far more complicated than that. In the Defense Appropriations Bill, there is a major controversy over the repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Now, it appears that there is almost no way that the Senate will ratify that change, but it is attached to that defense bill that must be passed one way or another. And if you thought that would end the complications, you would be sadly mistaken, because it turns out that in the form of the bill now put before the Senate by its Democratic majority, there is an allowance for the coverage of abortions that might be performed in medical centers on U.S. military bases abroad. Now, this is going to lead to continued controversy. Now, remember, this lame duck session ends in less than 2 weeks. The Senate and the House are going to be going away for their Christmas recess, and that's going to leave virtually no time for an adequate debate or consideration of these issues. We're likely to see some kind of compromise cobbled together, but what it means for the nation is going to remain for the next Congress fully to determine. In the meantime, this is an ugly picture of what politics really can produce. But it's also, if you look closely, a warning about issues that can be embedded in legislation unnoticed by the public. That defense appropriations bill, indeed, includes the repeal of the Don't Tell policy, and also it includes that abortion coverage. We're going to have to watch this one very, very closely, not only for the next 2 weeks, but ongoingly, of course. Now, we'll be facing some big issues as we look to the future. Congress is going to be facing big issues as it is reconstituted in the new Congress next year. But we can already see the shape of the kind of compromises that are likely to be formed between President Barack Obama and the Republican leadership in both the House and the Senate. The kinds of issues being debated right now in this lame duck session are the issues that are going to endure into the coming Congress, and for good reason. It took some time for these issues to develop in their current shape, and they are not going to go away by the kind of legislative haggling and compromises, the taped together with duct tape kind of legislation that is happening now at the end of this Congress. It's an inglorious end to an inglorious Congress. So what should Christians think about this? Well, I would want you to note that many of the issues we are discussing related to the bills and legislative initiatives coming at the very end of this Congress are ones that remind us that in a fallen world, things are almost always more complicated than they seem. And not only that, there is tremendous moral value attached to every single decision that is referenced in this debate. The tax code, the jobless benefits issue, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, abortions on military bases, what an economy incentivizes or disincentivizes, and how we understand the nation's responsibility to face the reality of the budget and the deficit. Those are huge moral issues. Obviously, Congress alone is not up to this, nor is the entire political system. The reality is that these are daunting, huge moral issues that require not only our best thinking, but also some kind of negotiation through a political process. And there's the rub. This political process is inherently partisan, and it will always be so. Any review of American history will indicate that it has virtually always been so. And that is one of the realities of governing in a democratic republic in a fallen world. Speaking of a fallen world, it's hard to imagine any more graphic example of human depravity than what happened with the arrest in Mexico City of a 14-year-old U.S. citizen who is suspected of being a hitman for a drug cartel. He is suspected of beheading his victims. And when the 14-year-old boy was arrested in Mexico City, U.S. authorities said that he showed absolutely no remorse. This boy is believed to have been only 12 when he first showed up on the screen of law enforcement officials on both sides of the U.S.-Mexican border. This 14-year-old boy is now almost universally believed to have been, for some time now, a hitman, a murderer, a contract killer for hire. Now, think about the 14-year-old boys you know, and just imagine rewinding to when they were 12. Can you imagine that child as a hitman, a murderer for the Mexican mob? Well, the reality is, it looks as if this boy was. And how do we explain this? Well, certainly there could be sociological and psychological factors that are involved. But let's remember, he was not alone. He was part of a gang of young adolescents who were effectively a hit squad for these narco traffickers. This ought to sober us all when we look at this 14-year-old boy and recognize that if law enforcement officials know what they're talking about, and we must assume that they do, he is a trained, cold-blooded, remorseless killer. Do you need any further verification of Genesis 3? If you do not know the name of Asia Noreen, you should. She is a Christian, a woman in Pakistan, who is now sentenced to death for blasphemy. Blasphemy against whom or what? Well, blasphemy against Islam. And what was her crime? Her vocal Christianity, her witness to her faith. It turns out that she was with a group of workers who were thirsty. She offered them water but was rebuffed because, after all, she is a Christian. When she was offended by being rebuffed after she had offered her co-workers water, she defended her faith. And before long, she found herself, first of all, in what was called the protective custody of the police, but then the police turned her over to the religious courts where she was found guilty of blasphemy against Islam and the Prophet, and she was sentenced to death. Now, this story is spiraling out of control, because this woman is now hanging on to her life with her only hope apparently being international outrage towards the Pakistani regime. The Pakistani Supreme Court has actually sent a message to Pakistan's president that he may not commute the sentence, an act that is considered unconstitutional, but nonetheless rather rational in this land that is an official Islamic republic. Now, many of the laws that are now in place about the blasphemy against Islam are the very kinds of laws and policies that are now being demanded by Muslim nations and authorities in circles such as the United Nations. In Pakistan, these laws were put into place during the British occupation and then were accelerated and enlarged under earlier Pakistani administrations as we entered the last half of the 20th century. Now, blasphemy is defined as any kind of statement that is against Muslim theology, against Muhammad the Prophet, or against Islam in general. And it turns out that Asia Noreen has been found guilty and now sentenced to death. When we think about the great age of martyrs in the early centuries of the church, we are reminded that they were considered subversive of the regime and that they were accused of blasphemy against the imperial cult of Rome. Well, things just never change. It's almost exactly the kind of charge that is now brought against Asia Noreen in Pakistan. The court that has disallowed the pardon was the Lahore High Court. Her family is now hoping that even higher courts will strike down the death sentence or that she will eventually secure a pardon. As Time magazine reports, the fear doesn't end there. As Omar Warraich reports, while no one has been executed for blasphemy yet, 32 people, including two judges, have been slain by vigilantes. At Friday prayers this week, Yusuf Qureshi, a hardline critic from the Mahat Khan Mosque in Peshawar, offered a reward of 500,000 rupees to those who kill Asia Bibi. In other words, Asia Noreen. Also, as Time magazine points out, even if Asia Noreen is not executed, if she is somehow pardoned, she will have to leave her homeland simply out of fear for her safety, for so long as she is there, she will never be safe. Every Christian should be praying for Asia Noreen and for those we do not know by name who are suffering along with her, simply for being Christians. On the same-sex marriage front, last week the state of Illinois became the latest state to adopt civil union legislation, or at least its legislature has. It is now sent to the governor, who has promised to sign it into law. Now, the New York Times offers a very helpful chart about where we stand state by state. When it comes to same-sex marriage, it is legal in Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. Civil unions are legal in New Jersey and are expected to start in July in the state of Illinois. Domestic partnerships that grant nearly all of the state-level spousal rights as civil unions exist for same-sex couples who register in California, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington State. When it comes to domestic partnerships, these are legal with some rights that are connected to marriage in the states of Maine, Wisconsin, Hawaii, and Washington, D.C. Now, how exactly do we classify California? Well, I think the New York Times has it about right, reporting that same-sex marriage is not currently allowed while the issue makes its way through the courts. But same-sex marriages were performed there in 2008 before voters amended the state constitution to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman. We'll be tracking this story, as is necessary now, on not only a monthly basis or even a weekly basis, but a daily basis. Under the theme of your government at work, the Associated Press is reporting that a child nutrition bill is now on its way to President Barack Obama that is championed by his wife, the First Lady. It is a bill that gives the government power to limit school bake sales and other fundraisers, the health advocates say, sometimes replace wholesome meals in the lunchroom. Now, this is one of those political imbroglios that simply demands attention, because the biggest question here is whether or not any sane adults are going to show up into this political debate. What is government for? Well, that's a key issue. And the Bible gives some very clear instructions about the basic responsibilities of government. Of course, we look for security and human flourishing and the administration of justice. But it's under that category of human flourishing that you have a great deal of mischief about what government should and should not, can and cannot do. As historian Christopher Lash pointed out decades ago, the trajectory of our government has been towards greater and greater regulation and interference into the private spheres of life, for instance, those of marriage and the family. But beyond that, the sphere and institutional sector of education has also become a matter of hot political combat and increased regulation, indeed the federalization of so many of the most important decisions made by local schools. This bill has been championed by First Lady Michelle Obama as she seeks to reduce childhood obesity. But now the Secretary of Agriculture is being asked to limit, by his own permission, schools to a bare minimum of bake sales and similar activities because children are eating this food. All this comes after the City Council of San Francisco decided to bar Happy Meals in fast food restaurants. You have to wonder how long it is before moms are going to be asked at home to get permission to give sweets to their own children. This is not an argument for childhood obesity, certainly not an argument for poor nutrition, but it is an argument for governmental sanity and a warning against governmental overreach. Bake sales? Just consider all that's going on in our government. Is this really what our Congress should be giving attention to? One other aspect of this bill deserves note, and that is its provision for additional meals to be given to children who are at need, including dinner. This means the schools, in terms of their other functions beyond education, are now becoming social service centers to feed children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Now, there's a great deal of political debate to be had there, but just think of what that represents about the breakdown of the family and the natural functioning of the family, and just consider who the real victims are there. Those children. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Moeller. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. And for information about Boyce College, to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.